listening to Linoleum Knife.
Linoleum Knife.
That was like a dare, right? Like you were just waiting for me to object.
Why do you say that, Alonzo Duralde of therap.com? And What the Flick, the television movie review program on the internet.
Because Dave White of movies.com and KCRW's Unfictional.
Yes.
That was typically you. I'll just leave it at that, I think.
I don't believe that anyone listening to this podcast who's been listening since the halcyon days of the Nutcracker in 3D could say that there's anything typical about the music that I select when it's my turn to select. Mm-hmm. I have chosen a variety of artists and styles and genres, each of them distinctive and
right, but if
valuable.
If somebody were to say, like, you know, what kind of music do you think that Dave White, who is right now wearing a Dark Throne t-shirt, would be playing on
in
this
my
show?
In my defense, I've been home all Sunday morning, and this Dark Throne t-shirt is now too ratty and small on me to wear out in public.
Ah.
Hence, I am wearing it. I like Dark Throne. But I don't wear this much out in public anymore because it's just too little. My big fat belly hangs out. You know when your belly starts to hang out from another t-shirt?
I don't.
Well, sometimes that happens when the t-shirt up and shrinks up a little bit too much on you.
Yes, it's the shirt's fault.
It is the shirt's
doing. The shirt's
doing.
Fault, indeed.
There's a Spanish verb construction that if I remember my Spanish class in high school properly, there's a Spanish way of saying that the thing did the thing.
Yes.
Like, I didn't do the thing. The thing right. did the thing.
Yes.
The shirt did the thing.
The shirt shrunk on you.
The shirt know. Shrunk on me.
Yeah.
It did. I'm not the one that does the laundry in this house.
Oh. So maybe it's me and the shirt that are the fault for your enormous gut.
It could be a
peeking
thing.
Out from the bottom of this
it could
article
be a thing.
Of clothing.
It could be a thing where the laundress at the laundromat is washing the shirts in water that's too hot
uh-huh.
and drying them in a dryer that's too hot.
Uh-huh.
In a slow poison sort of way to sabotage the wearer.
Uh-huh.
That could be happening.
And you're ever expanding.
This could be like
frontal.
This could be like The Housekeeper, that Korean movie. Remember that movie, yeah, Korean movie we
yes.
saw? The Housekeeper. This could be that. Uh-huh. You could be doing that to me.
Don't you want some of this water? Drink it. The one thing I will say for that music is that when it started, I thought it was the theme from Boom.
I've listened to this cassette many times, and this also is the first time that I've ever thought about it being very similar to the theme from Boom,
mm-hmm.
which is a movie that most of our listeners have not
probably
watched.
Not.
But it's a late 60s Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton art film.
Art failure, perhaps.
And,
it's John Waters' favorite movie.
It's got a theme. Why don't you sing a little bit of that theme music? Yeah. So if you slowed that down and turned it, you know, funereal.
See your doctor. There's usually a stinging.
And that's
discharge
this is
involved.
The name. The name of this band is Tomb of, with a little ellipsis after the of. So Tomb of ..
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was my favorite EC comic.
Andy at Aquarius Records wrote rhapsodically about this on their website the week it came out,
mm-hmm.
and I immediately ordered it because when Andy says something is fantastic, it's true.
And thanks, Andy.
And I did, and I have since actually had a discussion with him about this cassette, and he praised me for my
acumen,
my discernment in picking the right thing to buy.
Yes, you gave him money for it. Of course he's going to praise you.
Right? No. Andy's not about
no,
money.
I know, you got the nod. Dave White lives to go into record stores and get the nod
from
the cool register guy.
I think
because Dave White used to be the cool register guy, so he knows how hard it is to get the nod.
It
Yeah, man. This is awesome. You're all right.
I will admit.
You're good people.
I will admit that when I was younger, mm-hmm. but that mattered to me.
The nod.
The nod mattered.
I think the internet has killed the nod, except for Andy from Aquarius.
The internet has killed the nod. It mattered,
the email nod.
It mattered that I got the nod when I was young, because when you're young, you don't have a fully developed sense of yourself yet. Mm-hmm. And even if you are, you know, by nature drawn to the things that people consider the cool stuff.
Right.
Like me. But even if you are by nature drawn to that stuff as a preference, there's still a little door that you kind of have to walk through, and there are people lining that door, and they're sort of looking at you like, are you truly one of us?
Right.
You know,
I get the video store nod. I didn't feel
that so much as a young person. Like when I was in high school and college,
right.
I was in such small communities that there was no such thing as the nod. Mm-hmm. Because if you saw someone who looked like you, like back in the 80s, if you saw someone who looked like you, dressed like you, it's the same people. You would see the same people everywhere you'd go.
Right.
They were at the record store in the import section.
Yes.
They were at the thrift store.
Looking for Jesus and Mary Chain 12 inches.
They were at the thrift store buying their clothes. They were
At the show.
You know, like in 1984 in Lubbock, Texas, if you even knew where to find the squatting warehouse made of cement where Black Flag was actually going to play their show, then you were automatically in the group.
You were in the community.
You were automatically in because that show was advertised on flyers, on lamp posts, and
right.
and spoken, you know, word of mouth between the people who were actually going to go. And so it wasn't a thing where you had to be, you know, you didn't have to pass a test of any sort. You were just sort of like, oh, you're going to go to this? Obviously, you are now one of us.
Right.
But later in life, as I went to larger cities, mm-hmm. and I realized that there was a whole culture of snobbery going on. That was the thing. I was operating completely outside of that
right.
as a kid, and even in college for the most part, because again, such isolation.
There weren't enough people that, to be exclusive about. Right. You had to take all comers.
Yeah. It wasn't until I walked into a record store in Dallas for the first time, and I brought something to the counter, and the record store guy, the guy behind the counter, said to me, "You have perfect taste in music." Like he said that. That's a quote. He said that.
What were you buying?
I don't remember.
Really?
I don't remember.
You don't remember your first nod?
I don't remember what it was. I remember one of the items, but uh-huh. I bought like five records.
Right.
And one of the items, and this wouldn't constitute getting a nod because it was 1989. Mm-hmm. No, it was earlier than that because my family moved to Dallas in 83.
Yeah.
So it was earlier than that, but I bought, at the time, the renewed cult of Nina Simone had not kicked in. But I bought an old Nina Simone record amidst the noise that was the other four or five purchases.
Gotcha.
And I don't remember what he was looking at when he said I had perfect taste in music. I doubt it was the Nina Simone
record.
Perhaps
it was the gestalt of your entire purchase.
But I had heard I want a little sugar in my bowl somewhere. Mm. And I was like, who's that lady? Or man. I'm not sure who. I'm not sure exactly what gender this
or
person is.
Or throaty. Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
And
that's like the kid in High Fidelity who gets busted ripping off, stealing like, you know, it's like the Velvet Underground and Serge Gainsbourg and like four or five completely different things. And
right.
Cusack's like, all right, you're starting a band.
I don't remember what it was, but the guy said to me, "You have perfect taste in music," and I thought to myself, "I know, I do." But it was after that where I was thinking, and then when I started working in a music store, in record stores myself, mm-hmm. did I realize that other record store employees, the game was take a dump on the person that just left. Like, let's tear them apart. Like, we were not allowed to do it to their face.
Well, no.
You hear about record stores where that's what happens.
Right.
Where they're mean to you in the store. But again, Lubbock, Texas, you can't afford to be mean to anybody.
Yes.
In the store. And to argue about things. This is why I won't argue about, let's extrapolate this to the actual subject of this podcast. It's pointless, and I refuse to participate in debates about the merits of various films unless it's with you, because you never convince anyone of anything.
No, of course not.
You only succeed in making them dig their heels in more deeply.
Right.
And so I don't like the arguing back and forth about the merits of this or that. My favorite thing that you do, thank goodness for me, every year, is you share with me the back and forth of emails, and I'm not going to name names. But at the end of each year, when it's time for you to vote on things in your various capacities as a much fancier film critic than I am, you share with me some really, really wonderful emails that are written by people that are not you. And the level of know-it-all-ism that goes on out there never ceases to make my day. I can't wait for December to start reading these emails about who's right and who's wrong and who's stupid. And then it always descends into name-calling, which is my very favorite thing.
But no, you're,
for grown people to
you're
do
right.
with
that,
one another.
All that kind of thing does is make you get more entrenched in whatever your opinion was in the first place. Like, you know, my dear friend Robert Abley would like always want to mix it up and like just argue and argue, like he was going to break you down at some point.
He used to start up with me about things, and I'd be like, whatever.
And I used to let him do it. We would have these arguments that literally would go on for days. It was ridiculous. And then finally, I remember after a quiz show,
right,
which he loved, and I thought was all right. You know, I mean, there were some good things about it, but I didn't.
Good enough.
Didn't love it. Good enough.
Good enough.
And he starts digging into me about not liking it enough.
Oh, God, like those people on movies.com when they're like, how come you only gave this 4 stars? Well, there's only 5 in the scale that I'm allowed to give, and 4 is pretty darn good. Well, Shut up.
So I basically said, you know what? I like this movie. If you start arguing about this with me, you're going to make me not like this movie. So let's just, you know, let's keep this bid, you know.
Right.
Don't haggle with me or the deal is going to get worse. And he shut up. And I was like, okay, I figured this out finally.
Every once in a while, back when we first moved here and I was really getting to know Robert, he would occasionally...
pull that one on you?
He would occasionally start about a movie that he thought was garbage that I liked. Mm-hmm. He'd be like, oh, Dave, why? Like, that was always the lead expression, because no one calls me Dave. Everyone calls me Dave White. I'm Charlie Brown, essentially. He'd be like, oh, Dave White, what a... I'd be like, whatever, man, I'm not going to argue with you.
You can present your opinion, and you can try and, you know, sort of Socratic dialogue into making somebody defend their own position on it, and maybe in doing so they'll have to rethink certain things.
Right.
But you can't change someone's mind about aesthetic opinion.
Right.
You know, if you like Celine Dion, I'm never going to convince you that maybe you shouldn't. You know, there's no point to it. And who am I to say anyway? You know, if you like Celine Dion, I like Celine Dion. You know, get enjoyment in this life wherever it comes, and you know. That's what matters.
I hear she sings, speaking of the whole trending hologram topic.
Oh, yes.
I have been told
yes.
in the past week since we discussed her.
Right.
Was it last week?
Or 2 weeks ago.
That at her Vegas show, she sings to a hologram of herself. Like she duets with a hologram of
like
herself.
Like with her crazy young curly hair self?
I don't know. That she duets with a hologram of herself.
Wow.
We're going. We're going. We are going. Anyone who lives in Las Vegas that has a cat-free home and a comfortable large bed, if we can't afford a hotel, we may take you up on your generous offer.
That you haven't made yet.
That you haven't made yet. To put to house us while we go to see Celine Dion sing to a hologram of herself.
I seem to recall...
This is needs to happen.
I seem to recall that the last Streisand tour, she sang to a hologram of Marlon Brando in Guys and Dolls.
That's not good enough.
Or maybe just clips. I don't know.
That's not good enough. You need to sing to a hologram
of yourself. But ideally to a hologram of yourself that's captured live in the moment.
What do you mean?
Like so it's literally just you standing next to you right this second.
How could that happen?
I don't even know.
That would be like the time travel in Detention.
I don't understand holograms or time travel, so. Should we talk about Detention since, is it even still playing? Did it come and go, like?
It's still out there. Did we not talk about it?
We didn't
because I had to review it.
Still. And I just saw the last.
It had opened, but it's kind of a hard movie to explain.
Yeah, it stars.
It's from the director of Torque, which is the most important thing you need to know,
right?
Because Torque is an incredible film that I cannot make people believe is an incredible film, but it is, and it's it's a crazy, you know, motorcycle action film that is also sort of like a crazy comedy fantasy about the genuinely unreal, crazed, you know, Mountain Dew blasted world of...
Extreme sports.
Yeah.
I mean, the bits of it that I've seen...
With karate.
The bits of it that I've seen look like this crazy, color-saturated advertisement.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a valid aesthetic for filmmaking.
And so Detention is Torque without motorcycles, but in high school, and with serial-killing, scream-like... murderers and the prom and a time traveling bear.
Yeah, I missed the first half hour, and this is the kind of movie where if you miss the first half hour, there's no catching up. It struck me as sort of like Torque via John Hughes with a dollop of Donnie Darko.
Yeah,
is that a fair?
And 3 o'clock High and Heathers and Parker Lewis Can't Lose and. bizarre 90s nostalgia and...
Yeah, M-Bop from Hanson gets its own card in the closing credits.
It's crazy.
Oh, and it's Godardian, too.
It's Godardian as well. Gray hated it so much.
Interesting.
And I don't love it as much as Torque. And you'll notice that I'm not explaining the plot to you at all because it
down that path lies madness.
Barely matters because there's no really getting at the plot of this film. It is a high school movie where everything happens, but nothing really goes on. And it's almost like a stylistic exercise, but it's such a compelling stylistic exercise to look at. It's not a horror movie. I think they were selling it as a horror movie, and I wish they hadn't because that's not really what it is.
Well, there is sort of a serial killer subplot, but...
Right, but it's like someone dressed up like Lady Gaga is the serial killer. There's like a bandage face person, you know, cloak, like in Scream.
Right.
And they're, you know, they people do get killed, but they're not... It's not a horror film. It's not even a slasher movie.
I'm interested to go back and watch the first half hour because from what I saw, it was just like, what? You know, and it seemed like it was all intentional.
I liked it a lot.
You know,
I may probably like it more as time goes on just because I want this guy to make a movie every year. I don't want him to have to struggle and just continue making music videos and whatever else he's doing in between gigs.
Right.
I don't want to wait 7 years between films from this guy. He's got something going on, and it's something that I want to see more of because he will only progress down a path if he's allowed to make more features.
Right.
And I really am, I'm behind him. You know, like, Torque is great, this is good, and
Josh Hutcherson is behind him since he was the executive producer the movie as well as starring in it.
Josh Hutcherson of The Hunger Games and Firehouse Dog. And he is the executive producer. He's also the star as a sort of know-it-all skateboarder, unicyclist.
I missed the unicycle.
There's a scene where he's on a unicycle in the hall, and he's like high-fiving people as he's unicycling down the hall.
And I was impressed at how much this movie must have spent on music rights, because there are several jokes about the passage of time that involve like the big hit of that year, of the last 20 years, basically.
Yeah. Because there is time, there's genuine time travel in this film, where people go back and give birth to themselves.
Yeah.
It's that ridiculous and nonsensical. I mean, if you were trying to make sense of it on any level, you'd get lost.
Yeah. You would need like a long roll of butcher paper and several note cards. And
I don't think it makes actual sense. Like, I think if you really break it down, I don't know that it
probably
that,
doesn't. But time travel movies never do.
Well, because you can't do time travel.
No.
Because if you think about time travel, and I put this in my review, there's a Chuck Klosterman essay in his book, Eating the Dinosaur, about time travel. And it's, you know, essentially it erases itself.
Yes.
Nothing can time travel, because it would erase itself, or it would alter everything so deeply that you wouldn't have anything to go back to.
Or you wind up on this sort of endless loop where, you know, John Connor can only be born if he tells Kyle Reese to go back and father him. Yeah. What?
You know, yeah.
So it's
a fun movie. It barely opened.
Yeah, it opened here in like the Burbank Mall.
It opened on one screen in Los Angeles, and that's even by art house standards.
Yeah.
That's not what happens.
Excuse me.
So
it may be something we have to talk about when it comes out on DVD. But yeah, in the meantime, if it's around you, if it's still there, perhaps you should check it out.
Yeah, if you're near a theater where it's playing, go see it, because it's not like anything else out there right now.
No.
And it's and then if you just go see Torque, go rent Torque. Torque is
Torque.
Torque is astounding.
I need to see it. You've been telling me this for years. I even bought you the DVD for Christmas one year, and I haven't watched it yet, but I need to do that.
Of the how many DVDs do I own? 7 maybe.
Yeah.
One of them is Torque.
Yes.
Yeah. It's so great.
What opened this week?
I don't know. The Lucky One.
Yeah, which I was the lucky one, because I didn't see
it. Yeah, if you were actually lucky, you didn't see this film. Oh, you know what, though? Here's what I'm hearing some women that I know be all like, oh, it's all right, I just gotta like it in. I was in the right mood, and then there's a... No, you weren't. I'm real sorry I'm not sorry at all.
The evil power of Nicholas Sparks.
I understand that there are moments in your life when you don't feel well and you need
an I Have the Flu and HBO is on.
Yeah, movie. You need something that will just look pretty, maybe, or that you could sleep through about 20 minutes of in the middle and wake up.
Time tea movie.
And it was still, you wake up and the movie's still going on cable and you
pretty much piece together what's going on.
And you've got to pee maybe, but you just feel so comfortable that you don't want to get off the couch, you know.
And you're willing to hold it in for a while.
And so you're just sitting there looking at it. And, you know, your hair's all, you haven't washed your hair and, you know, you're wearing sweats, you know. I understand that there's a kind of film that fits your mood.
Right.
And that this will be a film like that. No, this is the kind of movie where you're just, it's sort of like you, it's not even comfort food, because comfort food implies that someone took care with making it. Like if someone's making you a meatloaf and mashed potatoes, that's someone tried to make that. And it might even be delicious and somewhat nourishing. This is not that.
It's a comfort patch.
This is like a NyQuil haze. And I'm not anti-Nicholas Sparks. And I'm not anti this kind of film. I thought The Vow was pretty good.
You did.
The Notebook is really good. It's but this the Nicholas Sparks template is I don't even mind if that's your template. Like if you've got all the right you know, the same beats and everything, but just don't be lazy, you know? Tyler Perry has made a couple movies that I don't hate.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the same template. And this is essentially a Tyler Perry movie, but with Zac Efron and the lady from Atlas Shrugged. You know, she's got an abusive ex-husband who, you know, he's making trouble for her and Zac Efron because Zac Efron's significantly better looking than the ex-husband.
You don't say.
And, you know, if you will turn down your speakers for the next 30 seconds, well, 15, because I already told you more about the movie, I'm going to give away the ending of this film. And I want Alonzo to clock me at 15 seconds, and I will give away the ending of this film, just like I did on Whitney and Bibbs's podcast the other day where we were guests.
We were going to plug that later.
Plug that at the end. But I gave away the ending. I'm going to give away the ending now. And clock me.
Go.
Okay. At the end of the movie, the abusive ex-husband is crushed to death by a treehouse. And it's almost worth the price of admission to see this stupid ending.
Time. Okay. All right. Thank you for sharing that. Now, yeah, so you said this is one of those movies that was like shot entirely in magic hour.
Yeah, yeah. It's always, the sun is always rising or setting. The sun is so like
golden.
Warm and golden and diffuse. Like, I don't think it's something you can even do yet with digital effects. This is a lighting process that genuinely made me wonder how long it took them to shoot the movie. Like, it was always, I was thinking, is this the crap Days of Heaven? Like, am I watching the poop version of like some really awesome? Remember when Providence was on TV?
Only because you watched it.
Providence, that show with Melina
Carradine.
Yeah. Dr. Amy Grant was her actual name.
Giving puppies to autistic children.
Give puppies to children with autism, and the child with autism would be cured by the puppy. That's what would happen on Providence. When on Providence, the sun was always, there was always this golden sun bathing everything in the show.
I bet you can fake that with CG, because you know the Providence was cranking those episodes out in 4 days or whatever.
In Burbank on a set somewhere, yeah. This is the crap Days of Heaven. It's people in love, romantic drama. It's like built from a kit, but wrong.
Well, you know? As I recall, Providence was a show to watch when you were depressed and wanting to eat Sara Lee cheesecake bites.
Oh, yeah.
So I suppose...
Which they no longer make. I mean, they make these little teeny versions of them that you get in a cylindrical bucket now.
Oh, bro.
Yeah, it's not the same. They were larger.
Yeah,
they were back in their heyday. They were
cubes.
They were significant. They were like tiny little Eskimo pies almost, with cheesecake in the middle of them, and like a graham crust and enrobed in chocolate. And it was they were so delicious, and I would polish off an entire box
during an episode of
Providence. Yeah.
So I'm sure the lucky one will fulfill that same role
for somebody,
women's lives.
Yeah, I would watch Providence on a Friday night when I was depressed. Then I'd be like, I hate Los Angeles and want to go home to Texas and everything's stupid. And I'm going to watch Providence and eat these things. And
you literally started watching Providence during the move. Like, we were like in a hotel room in Albuquerque.
And it was all that was on. It was the only channel that would come in on that TV.
It was Providence.
It was fate. Yahtzee. Kismet. The
hoodoo.
The
power of Melina Canicetti.
So the lucky one is like a, it's a anybody who hated the idea of going to see the Human Centipede 2.
Where's this going?
Imagine what a fan of The Human Centipede 2 would think about The Lucky One. Like, the same feeling that you have about The Human Centipede 2.
Gotcha.
And you're both right. That's, yeah.
Fair enough. Also this week was Think Like a Man.
Which is really funny.
Which is much funnier than I thought it was going to be and much more entertaining.
And I already got somebody, why did you only give it 3.5 stars?
Oh, brother.
Well, because it's not as good as Jumping the Broom. That's why.
No, and because there's too much.
If we're going to compare African-American comedy to African-American comedy, yes. And there are so few of them that are worth talking about, right. Or even so few of them, period.
That are made at all, yeah.
That you can compare them from year to year.
I mean, you could also compare this to He's Just Not That Into You,
yes,
which
could.
Is also an ensemble movie
but
based
that
on an
kind of sucked.
Movie. Yeah, it's. I would say it's better than that one.
This is much better than that one.
And but
He's Just Not That Into You is not good. And I mean, there are moments.
There are moments. Yeah, no. There were some funny moments. Is Jerry Ferrara in both of them?
Turtle. Is Turtle in He's Just Not That Into You?
Isn't he?
I'll look that up right now.
My problem, the one thing that He's Just That Into You has over Think Like a Man is that nobody in He's Just Not That Into You has read the book. He's Just Not That Into You. And the authors of He's Just Not That Into You do not appear in
on screen.
He's Just Not That Into You. Think Like a Man, however, there's so much discussion of Steve Harvey's book, Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man, that it is like it keys into the plot where the women are behaving the way they are behaving because they read his book. And then the men read his book to get their revenge and to, you know, trump the women at their own game.
That's right.
And then Steve Harvey pops up on screen to talk about his book and explain what's in his book and why his book says what his book says.
That's what, at the end of Aretha Franklin's song, Who's Zoomin' Who, in her little spoken word part, she says, you will remember my name. I'm the one who beat you at your game. That's what this film is about entirely.
Mm.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's basically about women demanding that men up their game. Men realizing that the women are demanding that and faking upping their game and then deciding that maybe they'll up their game after all.
Mr. Ferrara needs to change his IMDb picture. Do actors navigate their own? Do they manage their own
IMDb page? I would imagine they have, you know, at his level, he should have people for that sort of thing.
He ought to have people, right?
Yeah.
Well, he's still Fat Turtle on his IMDb.
No, he's not fat anymore.
He's Skinny Turtle now. I guess he's not Turtle anymore either, is he?
No. Mitch McConnell is.
No. He was not in whatever the hell.
Some entourage person was, and he's just not that into you.
I don't know. I don't know which one it was. But in this movie, Turtle's in love with Gabrielle Union, and she loves him back, which is very strange.
Well, you know, sometimes...
She's Gabrielle Union.
Sometimes you hook up with...
Have you seen Gabrielle Union?
Sometimes you hook up with somebody
in college. I wonder if everyone listening to this podcast
and then, you know,
has seen Gabrielle Union. A stone fox.
She's gorgeous.
There's no...
But, you know, their characters got together in college, and, you know, so maybe she wasn't as hot then, and then she just doesn't...
Oh, you think she just blossomed into Gabrielle Union? She was that beautiful from child,
okay,
from the womb.
Okay, so
she came
so
out
this is
like
the
that.
This is the first movie or TV show ever where a super hot foxy lady is with a regular-looking dude.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen every dang day in the world. I'm saying it's still wrong. It doesn't work like that. A woman like that.
Excuse me. You were the one who kept defending the fact that somebody who looks like Katherine Heigl would have a one night stand with somebody who looks like Seth Rogen. So
you're
do
right.
not get to turn around just because you don't think Turtle is as hot as Seth Rogen.
Perhaps you've got a point there.
I believe I do.
Maybe I'm wrong.
But yeah, this is.
I suppose that Gabrielle Union could pick Turtle.
I think she could.
As a life partner.
It's a funny movie, and it's got a cast of really talented actors who very often wind up getting crappy roles in movies about white people or crappy roles in movies that involve Tyler Perry or Eddie Murphy. So because neither of those things is happening here, it's nice to see them, you know, have their moments and do things and be interesting.
Yeah,
and,
no, it's
Gabrielle Union, Megan
Good, who's also
Taraji P. Henson. Where's Regina Hall? Have I seen her in anything?
Are you kidding me?
Regina,
are you joking?
The one who plays the single mom.
Are you kidding? You don't know where you've seen her?
No.
Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, that's her. Oh, okay. I forgot about that.
That ain't no man.
From Scary Movie. Okay.
She's Brenda. She's Brenda.
You're right. Foolish me.
One of the guiding lights of pop culture of the past 10 years. has been you. Brenda.
From Scary Movie.
One of my favorite human beings in any film of the past 10 years, Brenda.
But you also enjoy seeing her get murdered.
No. I want her to always be with us.
Oh, she is. In almost every movie I go to, Brenda is there in spirit. Oy. And then, but also the dudes like, you know, Michael Ealy, Romany Malco, Kevin Hart, super funny.
Kevin Hart is hilarious.
Had no idea he was that short.
He's the shortest human being maybe in the world.
He's shorter than Turtle.
Danny DeVito.
Well, with that, Danny DeVito, that's...
He may be shorter than Danny DeVito.
No, no. I interviewed Danny DeVito once.
I did too. He's incredibly short.
I was standing next to him. You interviewed him at a round table.
Danny DeVito,
yeah,
I know. And when
he's
I
a
sat,
toadstool.
When I sat down, his face was like at face level with me. He's not 5 feet tall, I think, Danny DeVito. And so...
oh, when you sat down and he was still standing.
Yes,
oh,
gotcha, he was okay, standing.
Yeah. He's a wee thing.
I just blanked on. Anyway, Kevin Hart, short,
very funny, though.
Yeah, and super funny.
And what's cool about this movie is that and Terrence J, who I don't know who he is either, but he was funny.
Yeah.
What was cool about this movie is that, like, you know, so often in, like, you'll see like some movie about white people, and there will be like the black friend who's part of the group,
right?
Or, you know, in a black movie, they'll be like the one white person who's there. And they always feel tacked on, which they pretty much have been.
Right.
This movie, they're like, there's like two white guys that hang out in this group of otherwise black friends. And it feels organic. It feels like, yes, they actually do know each other and hang out and, you know, bust each other's balls the way friends do. And, you know, which, so that's, that. It merited observation in this movie, because so often that's just so awkwardly like, did you really believe that last Tyler Perry movie that Rebecca Romijn hangs out with whoever plays the fiance?
Who does play the fiance in that last
the Tyler one Perry who's movie? Not Tandy Newton. I forget who's the fiance.
Good Deeds. Isn't it Gabrielle Union?
No.
Isn't it not?
I don't think so.
We forget who's in anything.
We see too many movies.
Wait a second. I'm gonna click on this.
I also want to point out that you know, there's one of the characters in Think Like a Man has a, you know, smothering and overbearing mother. You probably already guessed that she's played by Jennifer Lewis.
Yeah.
Who owns these roles and does them like nobody else.
It's Gabrielle Union.
That was Gabrielle Union?
In the Tyler Perry, in Good Deeds as the fiance.
I've already, well, then that was such a, again, another nothing role for an actress.
Yeah, she had nothing to do.
But yeah, so like, I did not believe that like her besties were going to be Rebecca Romijn and gay pinky out Jamie Kennedy.
Right.
But I did buy Turtle and the other,
the
guy who they say, you're not white, you're clear.
You're right.
I did buy them hanging out with these guys.
Well, the only big mainstream films that get the subject of race right without addressing it as a subject,
right,
are the Fast and Furious movies.
True,
because
it is never mentioned.
It's the subject of, oh look, we are a gigantically huge group of interracially mixed people, like all the races are in the Fast and the Furious films, and no one ever talks about it. It's just a thing,
right?
And it might not be reality for some people, but it is absolutely reality for lots of folks.
Yeah.
Especially if you live in a city like Los Angeles or New York or any other big city where there are a million different kinds of people all in the same spot, unless you are studiously avoiding the other races.
Which some folks do.
Which I suppose some people do. You're going to have friends and coworkers and
people who share your interests.
Colleagues, yeah. You're just going to have folks of all these races in your life. And so, but the Fast and the Furious movies are the only ones that just take that as a given and move on to the real nature, to the real business at hand, which is heisting things.
Right.
And
driving real fast.
And driving real fast. But so yeah, this is a really good movie.
It's fun.
Did it not just make like all the money?
It was the number one movie this weekend, which partially I'm sure the fact that Mr. Harvey has a syndicated radio show that's very popular, no doubt helps.
Oh man, he is the smartest human being alive. He's like, I'm gonna write this book. People think comedians are really funny. They'll listen to anything we have to say.
Right.
And so he decided, I'm going to write this book about relationships. Women, the only people who buy books, the only people who buy self-help books.
Right, I believe them.
Bought it in droves. Now he's going to executive produce the movie. He's going to have everybody in the movie read the book, talk about the book, argue about the book. He's going to be in the movie stopping the action to tell you about the book and his opinions about relationships and the rules that he has laid down about these relationships. He runs, it's like, it is as though everyone in the movie is a marionette and he is the puppet master. Like he's God of this film, just sort of letting, and they're all like, what would Jerry do? I mean, not Jerry, what would Steve do? What would Steve do?
And part of the problem is that these characters really do lean toward the archetypal. Like, when we're introduced...
Well, they tell you, they when don't we're lean toward them, when they, we're, they give you their archetypes.
When we are introduced to the characters, we are literally introduced to them as, like, the dreamer, the mama's boy, the player, you know, it's like...
Well, I think that's how they are in the book, too.
I guess, but it's like, but in a movie
I've
where you're telling...
I've been reading the book.
Oh, really?
Because, you know, I want to make sure that you behave.
Yeah, you already got me. You don't have to, like, read some man trap book.
I got to make sure you keep behaving.
Anyway, so yeah, Steve Harvey.
There is a gay in the movie who picks up the book.
And he
flits off.
He snatches it from some woman at a
cloud
bookstore.
Of little glittery dust.
Yes.
It's obviously insulting. And, of course.
Stereotypical.
Of course it's insulting. It's a gay character in a romantic comedy. They don't do anything.
And it's a gay character in an African-American film.
They don't.
Let's face it.
Well, okay, yeah. They don't do anything. The gay character doesn't do anything in a movie anymore. Mostly. Like, 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, the gay character still, in 2012, is still like, ooh, girl, those shoes don't match that, blah, blah,
have
whatever.
An Appletini.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense an actual gay person watching it.
I will say, though, this is directed by Tim Story, who... was originally well known for at least the first Barbershop movie, which was very funny, and then went and did the two Fantastic Four movies, which are
also very funny,
yeah, but not intentionally, which was an odd choice. But now he's back doing comedy, and I think he's in his wheelhouse, and yeah, it's a fun movie. It's worth checking out. You just will have to listen to a lot of infomercialing for this book.
But that's part of the entertainment for me. I mean, really, I was enjoying the Steve Harvey interstitials with his giant teeth. Because on the big screen, his teeth are as big as a car. and so you're watching it, you're thinking, wow, Steve Harvey has lots of wisdom and about something I don't care anything about, what straight people do with their lives. And so...
Women are like this, but men are like this.
I had a really good time watching this.
I was entertained.
Go see it. You'll enjoy yourself.
And then
go rent Jumping the Broom, because that's a better movie. Yeah.
And then you can also rent Sex and the Single Girl, which is also based on a dating guide. But in that one, Helen Gurley Brown is played by Natalie Wood, and she has miraculously somehow now become a psychiatrist.
Yeah. That's a funny movie. You took me to see that at the Cinematheque when it was. I've seen that on a screen.
You're welcome.
We live in Los Angeles. It's great.
Also this week, chimpanzee.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. They eat a monkey. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, chimpanzees eat monkeys. That was my big takeaway from this.
Somebody told me that chimpanzees will also eat their own babies. Somebody told me that.
Not in a Disney movie, they won't.
Is that in real life?
I have no idea. We'll look it up later, but you know that if they did...
I'm going to Google it right now.
Because the thing about these Disney...
There's probably a YouTube video of a chimpanzee.
These Disney nature movies really go out of their way to, like, keep that G rating. Whether or not nature is cooperating with their G rating. But gorgeous photography going on here, and some time-lapse stuff that I had never seen before that I thought was really amazing, like moss growing on a, like spreading out over like rocks and creeping vines making their way around a tree, and a spider. This seems like such an obvious thing for time-lapse photography. I've never seen it. A spider spinning a web.
Yeah.
Like watching the whole thing.
Yeah.
And doesn't the spider like glow in the dark? Didn't it get in at night at one point? They've, and the spider
they've glow in the dark to some of the things in the movie. I don't know how they did that.
Mm.
But it's really pretty when they do it. I like the thing. I like the when they show the slow motion, the rain coming down on the leaves and things.
Oh, yeah. The drops.
That was like the scene from Bambi when the rain comes down and plops on the leaves. Yeah.
And, you know, it was better than what was the last one called? Jungle Cats? African Cats?
African
Laser
Cats.
Laser Cats.
All right, here's what I've just learned on the internet. Information that might be false about chimpanzees. In desperate times, they may resort to cannibalism.
Uh-huh.
They're like humans. Mother chimpanzees can be good or bad. They can be protective or abusive. But they usually won't eat their own baby.
Just somebody else's baby.
Sometimes they will kill the baby of another chimp or another group of chimps, and they'll eat those babies. But apparently chimpanzees will cannibalize each other if they need to.
Well, so will Peruvian soccer teams.
But they will. They will eat. They'll eat a monkey, though. I watched that.
Yeah, they will gang up and chase a monkeys and
yeah, they'll chase a monkey. They're not just saying monkeys go home.
They're like, saying monkeys get in my belly.
Come to dinner.
Monkeys,
you are dinner, monkey. Yeah. Otherwise, it's it's not a particularly interesting movie. It's okay.
Yeah.
I gave it a pretty good review because the baby chimps mm-hmm. are so cute.
Yeah.
Like, I can't. Alonzo Durell, the film critic of therap.com, blowing his nose.
Away from the microphone.
Well, still audible.
The rest of the show.
I know. And you've been doing that quite a bit. With the snort.
Shut up.
So
make your inane point about this movie, please.
I don't remember. Cute chimpanzee babies.
Yes.
That's basically it. If you like cute chimpanzee babies, you should watch this.
And time-lapse photography.
Because there are some really cute chimpanzee babies.
Yes.
And they're banging, nuts with rocks and
edible nuts.
Yeah, the kind from the trees. The tree goes off the tree, and they take a rock and they hit the. And then Tim Allen makes jokes while they bang the rocks.
And I gotta say, I prefer Tim Allen making jokes to Sam Jackson waxing rhapsodic about their precious cubs.
Their precious. She will never see her precious cubs again because the hyenas have eaten her precious cubs. We've discussed this in the past when African Cats came out, but if you truly detest your children, you should subject them to African Cats because you will scar them for the rest of their existence.
At least the little girl in the screening we attended.
Terrify
still
your child
talking to her therapist about
out her. Of their skin. and because animals are, that is a tense, scary film.
Mm.
For little kids. That's all about hyenas stalking the what are they, tigers?
The leopards.
I don't remember now.
And then of course if you're siding with the cats, then they're like half the time eating zebras or something.
Right,
So like there's just
the poor zebras.
There is a circle of eating going on in these movies that little kids are gonna find a little disturbing, I think.
Yeah. But they show it to you in African Cats.
Yeah.
You're shielded from it.
Well,
in chimpanzee.
I mean, they show them sort of
if
like
you have a tiny little
they show
child,
them kind of
you
tackling
couldn't lie.
The zebra, and then you see their backs while they're all gathered around eating. And it's kind of the same with the monkey. Is like they surround and grab one. It's almost like they're describing how to play Quidditch because there's a charger and there's an ambusher and there's a this and a that, and then they bring down the monkey, and then you don't ever see you kind of see them maybe holding up a monkey jaw and like maybe
they don't know you don't off, see
but,
that
but not much
you don't see that at all what yeah. you.
Oh,
if you had a little child with you, you could lie. eye to the little child. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like African Cats where it's clear what's happening on right. screen. If you had a little kid with you and the kid said, "Mommy, what's going on?" They was like, they all, you know, gathered around that monkey and they're yelling at it because they want it to go away. Like, you could totally.
They're tickling that
monkey. You're tickling that monkey because they want to play with it. They're not, you know, they haven't just torn off its femur to sup upon it. You could lie to your kid and your kid would believe you because little kids always believe their parents. Until it's too late.
And then they become heroin addicts because you've been lying to them all
along. Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, Darling Companion.
It's a movie about a lost dog.
And the fancy,
and the bougie rich, people.
Who look for it.
In the cast of bougie people, there exists Diane Keaton and Diane Two Ends Wiest and Kevin Kline, also two N's, and
Richard Jenkins,
two N's, and Mark Duplass,
no N's,
two S's, and
Ilette Zurer,
whoever she is.
She was in Adam Resurrected.
Oh,
She's popped up in a few films. I think she's a really cool actress. You saw this first, and you were very not.
It's whatever.
Yeah, and I have not. I mean. Lawrence Kasdan hasn't made a movie in ages. Like, he hasn't made a movie since Dreamcatcher.
And I've been pretty happy about that.
But before that, he was making stuff like Grand Canyon that I was not crazy about. So I wasn't exactly missing Lawrence Kasdan, although right. I do have a certain fondness for some of his early stuff. So I went in not really expecting to care about this and just thinking it was going to be more sort of like irritating rich people and their rich people problems, which it is. But I sort of got charmed by the whole thing. I think he really writes fun dialogue for people, and there's all these really great kind of two-person scenes, you know, between Kline and Keaton, between Richard Jenkins and Mark Duplass.
Mostly just between Kevin Kline and Diane Keaton.
Well, they get the best scenes, for sure. I mean, they get the most sort of emotional scenes, but yeah. As far as, like, the funny scenes, yeah. Those are kind of spread out among everybody.
I remember there being very many funny scenes. There weren't, that wasn't laughing.
I laughed quite a bit.
I was just kind of hoping the dog would show up again.
I laughed a lot.
The dog was nice.
And it even does something that, like, usually just irritates the crap out of me, and by the end of it, I sort of forgave it, although it's still irritating, which is that the Ilette Zurer character becomes kind of the magical, mystical ethnic who helps the white people, the constipated white people, find their way in the world, you know?
Yep.
But, you know, it's there's a lot wrong about this movie, but I still was won over by it and was charmed by it and really had a good time watching it.
By the last bit, I was on board for Kevin Kline and Diane Keaton.
Right.
Being, they were rekindling the affection
yes.
in their marriage, and that was very sweet. But boy, did it take a while to get there. Man.
There were other things along the way that I found really interesting. I liked Richard Jenkins' character. I liked how uncomfortable he makes everybody until they finally kind of discover that he's not so bad after all. And, you know, they see what it is in him that Diane Wiest likes so much, you know. I don't know. I it worked for me.
It's okay.
Yes, it is okay. I don't want to overpraise it, but it's, you know, it's very smart. Summer counter programming.
Oh yeah,
you know,
because older audiences, this everything about this movie is catnip to older audiences. Yeah.
It's very there's lots of, you know,
not to insult older audiences,
but you know, like, they have this mountain home in the Rockies that just looks like a catalog, you know, yeah. And it's crazy. Like I was looking at the schedule, the release.
I know some people who have one of those too. I don't remember their name though. What's their last name?
Oh, shut up. I was looking at the release schedule for May, and you know, it was sort of like May 4th. It's The Avengers and Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Right.
And I was like, aha, this right. is counter programming.
I walked by Judi Dench's linen flowy separates from Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. They are already up in a little display case in the lobby of the ArcLight.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like at Macy's or something.
Oh, the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel line of lady clothing?
You know, I don't know if there is
I
one.
I don't
but
know
there,
that there is
perhaps
one.
There should
there
be.
There ought to be, yeah. They would sell it at Chico's.
Hey, there you go. Totally.
Where the ladies go to get their flowy pants.
Yes, and their linens. Zzzz. Yeah, well, we'll talk about that one when we see it. We haven't gotten to
and how
best exotic Marigold Hotel yet. I remember like the day that one of the Spider-Mans opened. I remember you and I went to go see Away From Her.
Was that really the
day? Yeah, I remember it was the Arclight, and like they had like 8 shows of Spider-Man.
Okay, well, here's the difference between Away From Her and Darling Companion. Away From Her is excellent.
Well, yes, and, obviously.
And Darling Companion is
okay.
Is fine.
I'm just saying.
It's the chimpanzee of of late middle aged people rom com doggy movies. Yeah,
that bustling genre. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I had a better time than Dave, but we both didn't hate it. So you know. Take that for what it's worth.
I think it's valuable that films like this continue to be made simply to remind people that old people still exist.
Yes.
So since you and I are getting older,
happen to them, indeed.
Yeah. Eventually we're going to be the demographic mm-hmm. for this kind of movie. I don't want anyone to think that when I become a 60-something-year-old man, which I assume is the same age of Kevin Kline and Diane Keaton, right? They're both in their early 60s by like now, fair, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so.
You know, I don't want anyone to think that I'm going to want to see a movie like this when I'm that old.
Because you don't want to see it now.
Because I don't really want to see it now. But, you know. I don't know. Can we be done talking about this movie? I have nothing else to say.
All right.
No desire to keep talking about it.
Okay. Is that it? Is that everything this week?
I don't know, maybe. I seem to recall writing a whole bunch of reviews this week.
Yeah, you wrote like 7. What else did you see?
This week? I'm going
that's
back
everything
to
I
look
saw,
at my thing here.
Get what it together,
I reviewed, The Hunter, but that was from a couple weeks ago, but I just had to catch up on that. Willem Dafoe in Australia hunting a Tasmanian tiger. Not bad. That's all I'm going to say about it. Nothing. Oh, The Moth Diary. You know what? I don't care about talking about The Moth Diaries. I'm just sad that Mary Harron's name is attached to it. Like, she's a cool director.
Yeah.
American Psycho, Notorious Betty Page, I shot Andy Warhol. And this is just a boarding school vampire movie about, you know, young girls in boarding school and vampires and the whole sort of like, you know, the blossoming of female sexuality. It's a fine topic for a film if you've got something new to say, but this is an adaptation of a book, which apparently didn't have much to say about that the subject. I would like a vampire movie with teenage girls in it to just be smarter, less shallow, less focused on surfaces and, you know, raining drops of blood.
Like when that stupid Dylan Dog movie came out. It's kind of like, you know what? If you're going to make a vampires versus werewolves movie at this stage in the game, like after Twilight and True Blood and all the million other things, you better have something to back it up. Like there better be some reason for you to exist because really we don't need anymore.
Either that or if you don't do that, then you're just one of those like post Jaws shark movies that came
out. Yeah, you are Mako Jaws of Death.
Yeah.
All right, and that was it. That's it. Okay. My DVD pick this week is like yours last week, Lovin' the Ladies, which you've never actually seen. It's a 50th anniversary DVD of a TV show that I've never seen, but that I've read about for years. I've always wanted to see it. I've never had access to it. Is now available on DVD. It's called I'm Dickens, He's Fenster.
I want you to reenact your initial reaction to looking at that information on Amazon.
And it stars John Astin and Bobby Ingalls. I can't even do it.
I'm going to do it.
Okay, fine.
I'm going to do it. Here's you. Oh, wait. You did that inhale gasp, which I have never been physically capable of doing. Hang on. I'm going to try it anyway. I'm blah, blah. He's blah, blah. It's on DVD. Oh, my God. That's kind of what you did.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's too bad that the listeners can't see your flailing hands.
You were flailing your
hands. Because I'm sure I did that,
you
too.
You were waving your little hands everywhere.
Uh-huh. I had a cigarette holder in one and a strawberry margarita in the other.
An apple teeny.
Well, I already said Appletini this episode. I didn't want to wear it out.
Appletini.
Your face is an
Appletini. Appletini.
What's your DVD pick, Dave White?
Appletinis. World on a Wire.
Explain.
Fassbender, 1973, the future.
Made for television.
Made for television in Germany. And we watched it yesterday.
Yes.
And I had two pugs sitting on me for most of the running time.
Yes.
And I did not sneeze or get teary or irritated.
Me neither.
Or congested. And I'm confused about that because...
I think those are some well-tended dogs.
Because, no, they were shedding all over us. We had to lint roll ourselves before we left the house. But, those dogs did not make me feel allergy things, and most dogs do, and all cats.
Right, ditto.
What happens in World on a Wire? It's the future, and there's a computer program.
It's sort of the future, but it's sort of not. I mean, like, they talk about the 80s and the 90s, like they haven't happened yet.
Right.
It's basically this government-backed science... thing called Simulacron, where they have created a virtual world with all these people in it that don't realize that they're virtual. And it turns out that certain industries are trying to use the information they're gleaning from that to sort of figure out their own, how much need for steel and plastic is there going to be in 20 years. And so they're trying to use this information for their own good, even though this is a government-backed thing. And
I will admit to being confused from time to time during the running time.
And then, somebody who lives in the virtual world tries to get out of the virtual world, and one of the people in the who works for the science thing kills himself at the very beginning because he knows something, and there's at the end of the first part you find out what he knew and the shocking truth, and then the whole second part of the whole follow up to that. And
it's very cool.
Yeah,
and I'm glad we watched all 3.5 hours.
It's a lot of fun. It's very cool to look at. I mean, I love the 70s future.
Yeah.
And it's very kind of Philip K. Dick, and it's sort of on a continuum of things like Blade Runner and The Matrix, and you sort of see where it's all kind of pieced together. Very, very cool movie, and that Fassbender, he was prolific.
He cranked him out more. Yeah.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Cocaine makes you work really fast, apparently. Was he? How old was he? He died when he
was 40, and he made 40 movies, I think.
Made like 45 movies or something like that. Yeah. Like, you got to be Takashi Miike to make that kind of, that many movies.
Most people who are on cocaine are not, they're either not that prolific or not that good. So don't try this at home.
I guess not.
You have to be Fassbender for that to work. We have mail.
Oh, yeah, we got letters. We're running real long today.
Yeah.
All right, here are the letters real fast. This one is from Ed. And Ed says, we won't ever find out what was edited out this week, will we?
You will not.
And no, you will not. Because if we told you what was edited out this week,
we wouldn't have edited it out in the first place.
I'll tell you privately sometime, man. But, Alonzo says things that aren't right sometimes that are not... they're not in keeping with what I consider to be the standards and morals.
Okay. You're the arbiter.
And so there's that. The rest of it is him just telling us how great we are, which is true. Have we seen the Jim Wynorski documentary, Papatopoulos, which is currently on Netflix on demand? Wynorski was the director of Chopping Mall,
right,
which is one of my favorite horror movies of the 80s.
He did a lot of movies involving
Demolition High,
topless women.
And this letter is from Brian, who's a guy we know here in town, and he says that Drew McWeeny tweetingly declared the movie "The Hearts of Darkness" of breast films. This is a clean podcast. We could say that, right? On the clean podcast?
I'm not sure.
Let's just say
that it rhymes with ditty.
Titty. Okay, there, fine. That's a titty.
All right. Titty movies.
Titty movies. That's in the realm of clean. It's so hard to know sometimes.
I know.
They keep moving. What will iTunes think is?
If anyone is paying attention, I think it's sort of self-regulated. Yeah. Frankly.
So no, we haven't seen this movie, and we're going to now because it's on Netflix Instant.
Yes.
I'm very excited to watch this documentary that I did not even know existed.
After we watch Rockula.
Yeah. After we watch Rockula.
Which came up this week on the B-Movies podcast at Crave Online, which William Bibbs Bibiani and Whitney Seibold were kind enough to have us on as their guest this week.
Seibold.
Is it Seibold?
Seibold.
Whitney Seibold, sorry. They call the episode something about guilty pleasures, but I prefer the term contrarian pleasures because I'm not guilty about them in the slightest. Oh. Anyway, but we talked about movies that we like that other people sort of raise an eyebrow at. And one of Bibbs's was this musical called Rockula. With Dean Cameron and Tony Basil and apparently B.B. King and Susan Terrell in Bumblebee costumes. So we haven't watched it yet.
Totally.
But
I'm going to watch both of these.
It's on Netflix Instant. I'm going to watch that Rockula and
Papadopoulos. And then the last one is from Bill, who is in Las Vegas, and he wants to know why in Las Vegas. Well, I'll read the whole letter. The Las Vegas City Life and Las Vegas Weekly are fine for catching up on local stuff like concert reviews, but the one thing I've noticed in both of these is that when you look at their movie reviews and they post the last 12 weeks or so, anything that's not on video yet, out of the 3 pages posted, the highest grade a movie will get is like a B-, and those are rare and not on movies that you guys rate very highly. I know the both of you don't necessarily follow movie reviewing trends either, but when I see a set of reviews that never gives a good grade to a movie, not even one, is that a sign that the people who are writing them are just jaded and jaded with their job and that everything that comes out is just trash or what? And I think the answer to that is yes.
You know, it's like there are the critics that you ignore, like your Sean Edwardses and your Maria Salases, who love everything.
But those are junket people,
right?
And they don't really review anything,
and they just want to get in the ad.
They're called to give quotes for ads, as though they are film critics, and they are not,
right?
Yeah.
And so I think that the flip side to that are these sort of like professional curmudgeons who hate everything. And I mean, I'm not talking about people like you know, again, contrarians, like somebody like Armand White, because he loves movies. He just doesn't love the ones that everybody else loves, and he hates movies, but he doesn't hate the ones that everybody else hates.
Right. He's great.
But if you hate everything, then clearly you are either trying to impress somebody or you should be doing something else for a living, right. I think.
I think that, you know, giving bad grades, you know, first of all, the whole grading system that has come along in the past however many years, the letter grades,
been going on forever.
The stars, you know, well, okay, sure, whatever. I don't like the grading system. I wish it didn't exist. I wish that you didn't go to movies.com and see stars next to my name.
Because it keeps you from having, you don't have to read the rest of the
You don't have to go read the review that way.
Thankfully at the wrap, I don't have to do that. But I think that unfortunately that's in a larger scale what people get out of Rotten Tomatoes.
I know.
You know, they want to know the aggregate, but they're not interested in what individual critics actually say.
I know.
Some readers, others obviously take it differently.
But if you are the kind of film critic that genuinely hates everything that you see, then that's not you knowing your stuff and having, you know, these exacting standards. That's just you being a pain.
Yeah.
Because if you really knew your stuff as well as you should and didn't wear it like this, you know, chainmail wrapped around your body,
sackcloth,
then you would be Manola Dargis, you would be Jay Hoberman, you would be Jonathan Rosenbaum, you would be a real critic whose job is not just to give a thumbs up or thumbs down or a star rating to, a real critic that writes about film in a way that places it in the context of the culture and in history and in politics and in, you know, everything that you would draw from your own education.
And in a way that it's a medium that means something to you.
Right.
I mean, because I can, you know, look, Manola
valuable
is
valuable historical film and art criticism. And
right.
That's not the same thing as 3 stars, thumb up or thumb down. Yeah. It's not the same thing at all.
But even taking the grades out of it, because I'm sure that's imposed on them. Okay.
Even those people, those, you know, film critics that are at the top of their game and have been for decades, they like stuff.
Yeah. Manola loves the Three Stooges.
Yeah. As we mentioned last week, she loved the Three Stooges. And so if you are not...
It's one thing to be exacting, and it's another thing to just be negative.
And self-conscious.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is what's going on there.
You're thinking too hard about the impact that you're having and not about actually doing the work of evaluating.
And you know what else? We might be overthinking it. The people who write for those papers might just be knuckleheads.
Or maybe only crappy movies open in Las Vegas.
I don't know. No, Las Vegas is a big city.
And yeah, because there are studio movies that merit some liking. So
yes.
Anyway, so yeah, so that's the thing. They're probably pills, but we don't know for sure. We have never met them. As always, we thank you for listening. When we do,
we're going to fight them.
That's right. If you have questions or comments or anything else that you want to send our way, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can like us at Facebook, the Linoleum Knife Podcast page. You can follow us on Twitter at linoleumcast. And you can check into the show on getglue.com. Even though we're listed as a TV show, it still counts. We always urge you to check out our dear friends in the podcast universe, The Popcorn Mafia, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Blowhard, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, The Showbiz Sandbox, Secretly Timid, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, and of course now the B-Movies Podcast. Go check it out. This week we guested Whitney and Bibbs, and we had a great time. If you're a fan of the show, thank you. Tell your friends about it.
Please tell your friends about it.
And go write us a nice review at iTunes.
Write us a review, please.
It helps us get the word out about stuff. And the Outfest 30, the Downtown 30 series that I've been curating for Outfest continues. May 23rd, we'll be screening Johnny Guitar with Joan Crawford and Sterling Hayden and Mercedes McCambridge, not currently available on DVD. It's a lot of fun, and it'll be cool to see on the big screen. It's showing in L.A. at the Downtown Independent at 8 p.m. So if you're in town, come check it out.
Bibbs called me the Velvet Lawnmower.
You can take that to the grave.
Do I like Velvet Lawnmower or Cartoon Dog? What's better?
Who says you have to pick?
I...
John Waters is the
in my bio,
is the king of puke just, and the pope of trash.
But in between Dave and White, there can only really be one thing.
Well,
should I be Dave the Velvet Lawnmower White or Dave the cartoon dog White?
I think just Dave Cartoon Dog White. I don't know if you need the.
I guess, maybe not the.
Well, that's something you can.
But
you
it should be the Velvet Lawnmower.
Yes,
that's the Velvet Underground,
right? Or the Velvet Fog.
Yeah, the Velvet Vampire.
You know who the Velvet Fog is, right?
I forget. That's who the Velvet Fog was. I know it was a nickname for somebody.
It's, I knew until we talked about it. The scatting guy who wrote the Christmas song.
Tony Bennett?
No.
Perry Como?
No. Mel Torme.
Mel Torme was the Velvet Fog. The Velvet Fog. I'm the Velvet Lawnmower.
The Velvet Leaf Blower.
Oh, kind of the Velvet Leaf Blower. Yeah. The velvet garbage truck that comes along. The beeping noises. And, I guess, is that it? Is that everything? We're done the talking.
Join us next week.
Bye.